You're listening to the Periodic Table of Awesome podcast, bringing you the best of geek from week to week. Join your hosts, Dion and Quinny, and the occasional special guest as they talk movies, TV, gaming, toys, comics, and everything in between.
Many years ago, this candle blessed our family with a miracle. Our house, our casita, came to life with magic.
Hola, casita.
In time, every member of our family,
Cecilia, up top,
was given their own magical gift.
I understand you.
I'm not super strong like Luisa.
The donkey's got out again.
On it!
Or effortlessly perfect like Señorita Perfecta Isabella. But Mama, why am I the only one that didn't get a gift?
You're just as special as anyone else in this family.
You just healed my hand with an arepa con queso.
Casita?
What's going on?
The magic is in danger.
We gotta get out of here!
We must protect our home. We must protect our family.
This is my chance. I will save the magic.
Wait, how do I save the magic?
Hola, mi amigos! Welcome to the Periodic Table of Awesome!
Hola!
Chiki boom, chiki boom, chiki boom.
Hola, mi friendos. Muy bueno. ¿Dónde está la biblioteca?
Muy picante.
Muy picante.
Wow.
Yeah. I went to Muy Picante once.
Hi, this is the whitest version of this we could possibly do. sorry, everybody who looked at these movies that we're talking about and went, oh, they're so beautiful, they're so diverse, they're, you know, so many different colors and faces on the screen. Hi, we are a bunch of middle-aged cisgendered white people.
Excuse me.
And we're here to talk about it, so let's do it.
Excuse me, you've got, like, the pink eye. I'm slowly morphing into a silverback. Jill and Peter are holding
up. Watch what you say next very carefully.
I was going to say, where are you going with this?
Jill and Peter are providing
where are you going? I can't follow, Mr.
Providing us with the most amazing, colorific wonderfulness that they always bring. And that's just their personalities.
Good.
This is true.
And we've got a very colorful screen. What are you worried about? Like, you know, it's fine. But we're talking about, like, you know, if you're worried about the problem with, let's not talk about the problem, but the problem is that this is a giant multinational corporation that is just ticking off the boxes of ethnic diversity.
Oh,
in
wow.
Their programming.
Shit, you're going right for the throat straight away.
I mean, look, Dion, you're not wrong.
Yeah.
Disney have a lot of facades and their true colors are probably coming out.
Disney, Pixar.
Not through their movies.
Tesla, Chevron, whatever they're in charge of.
BP, oil, Enron.
Here we go.
I was ready to feel like positive and happy and joyous and stuff like that. And you have gone straight to the
darkest timeline. There's nothing wrong with the creators. The creators are wonderful. And we love the creators. Not so much the mouse.
No. Like, this is
M-A-U-S. Is that how it's usually the mouse?
That's a, oh God. Okay. Yeah,
look,
I did.
I mean, they love to tout how LGBT inclusive they want to be, but meanwhile, they give money to the Don't Say Gay bill in America. And
did they actually support that bill?
Yes.
They supported the senators
Everyone.
That were supporting the bill. They gave money to the campaigns.
But like all giant corporations, when you get to
like,
the...
Oh, but we didn't know that's what they were going to use the money for.
Yeah. Like all giant corporations, they hedge their bets by laying odds on both sides. Like literally what they're doing.
And I know so many creators that have left Disney because of those reasons. Because they can't tell the stories that they want to. They're very selective with what they choose to put out there as their image. But we're talking about some very lovely movies that we all enjoy tonight. Not to get too political.
There used to be two separate.
Not? Let's just lean in hard on the whole political subtext.
There used to be two separate companies: one Disney, one Pixar, and then one ate the other one. And now it is literally Disney Pixar. And until we get to, what is it, Disney, Pixar, what's the other animation on? DreamWorks? Disney, Pixie,
Pixar. It's a totally different company.
Yeah, I know, but until that all eats itself and it becomes one thing and all they do is like, what do you like? I like animation. There is one animation company. It makes all animation.
Well, funnily enough, that's what Sony's recently done with all anime. Yeah, so Sony recently just bought Funimation and Crunchyroll.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah, so like there is now one place to get your anime, and soon there will be one place to get your other animation. It will be the Disney. But Peter, you haven't said anything thus far. How are you?
Just on whatever ride that we've decided to go on at the beginning of this.
She's enjoying the fun.
I know, right?
I didn't know that about Disney and the Don't Say Gay campaign. That's awful.
Yes.
Yeah.
Colours, my experience, maybe a little bit of all of these. But I don't know. I feel like even if it is propping up an evil corporation, you know, representation is still super important. So I'm still glad these movies exist. And pretty much everything we do is propping up an evil corporation. So until we escape capitalism, you know.
Yeah, very true.
Hi,
every breath we are take.
Unsanctioned mouthpiece that
I'm not going to fall down the straw man argument of like, yeah, how can you be against logging? You read newspapers. No. How can you be against entertainment? You watch movies. It's like, for fuck's sake. I know I watch movies. I watch lots of different stuff. Just because I enjoy getting an x-ray doesn't mean that I'm pro-nuclear power.
Love those x-rays.
Missy's making a point in the chat that Luca, which is one of the three Disney Pixar films that we decided to watch, was queer as fuck whether they liked it or not. And I got that vibe. Like, I was like, oh my god, are they doing it? Oh no, they're not quite doing it, but they're sounds a bit of maybe a queer baity movie. I don't know. That we can talk about.
Is he gay or European?
I don't know.
This is the question that women have been asking themselves for decades, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I'm just not sure that you can make stories about Italian communities like that and just insert gay people into it. There's never been Italian people like gay people in Italy. You know, never seen a gay person ride a Vespa. This is a reference to the power of the dog that people aren't getting and the cowboy backlash of like, you can't make that story.
Sorry, buddy. I haven't seen Power of the Dog yet, so.
No, there was that whole, there was a backlash. Like, you can't have someone who's not from America talk about it, like make an American West story. You can't make it gay cowboys. Right. And I was like, you totally can. Like, you're allowed to tell those stories. I don't care.
Yeah, anyway. And then Jane Campion rides in on a horse and just with both fingers going, fuck y'all.
So what are we doing tonight?
Not talking about the Oscars anymore.
We're doing three movies enough coverage. Somehow. Somehow we've ended up doing three movies, even though we usually struggle to get through one. I feel like this is because for months I've been saying we need to talk about Encanto. And then we went, sure, what about these other two Pixar movies that have also come out recently?
Yeah.
Let's talk and about all of them at the same time.
Yes.
Yes. Sorry.
So we've all watched three Pixar films.
Two.
This week.
Yes.
Two, sir.
Sorry. Dion has done 2/3 of the homework.
Yes.
Yes.
But I still will submit my mark for accreditation with the rest of your work. And glide on through.
Yeah, the group assignment.
I know you.
We have watched Encanto, although I watched Encanto a little while ago. We have watched Turning Red and we have watched Luca.
Yes.
Which are three very different films thematically, aesthetically. So an interesting watch. Luca is one that kind of went under the radar a little bit. I kind of didn't really know it existed until you guys mentioned it. So that was
interesting. Which is kind of the reason why I brought it up was I'd seen it a while ago and it's just a really pretty cute little movie and should get a little bit of love.
And one thing that I do find Yeah, it is beautiful. But you say that, you know, very different tonally or thematically. But I also think that all three of them do have really strong through lines, which is of the coming of age story. Mm-hmm. It's three different takes or looks at, you know, outsiders coming of age and in three wildly different styles.
That's a good point, yeah.
Is this coming of
like each one of them?
Are these coming of age films, or are these just three films about intergenerational trauma? Like, maybe a different
take. Are they not the same thing?
No. I mean, I watched a lot of coming of age films, you know, in the 80s that were terrible. They had nothing to do with how terrible parental trauma can transgress, like, over decades. Anyway, sorry.
Oh boy, yeah, I'm
ready. Both good points, actually.
Yeah.
All good points. So what we're going to do is we're going to talk in general about all three and give you our overall impressions, and then we're going to spoiler section all three at once. So we're going to split our three films.
Sure.
And I'll predicate you. 0 for 3 on the homework. That's very sad. How have you not at least watched Encanto?
That's all right. We're just going to help him make his decision on which one to watch first.
Yeah. Well, let's start off with Luca, because that is the kind of the easiest and quickest to talk about for me, because I thought it was such a sweet movie, super beautifully done and animated, and that is a little bit where my thoughts
What's Luca about? Because I didn't.
Do you want me to do? I've got a synopsis. If
go ahead.
Would you like some?
Okay.
Music?
The question is, how much of a shit accent do you want?
Oh, incredibly! No.
Give me stereotype Italian.
Yeah.
Okay.
Fuck, Jesus! Is this gonna be a John Barilaro lawsuit? Like that's sort of.
No. This is gonna be more Jared Leto.
Go for
in, the House of Gucci.
It's a me.
Set in a beautiful seaside town on the Italian River. Oh, hang on. If I do the hands, it becomes racist. Sorry.
That's the line.
That's the line. As soon as you do this, you're like, oh, no, I've just become a mockery. This originally animated feature is a coming-of-age story about one boy is experiencing an unforgettable summer with gelato, pasta, and endless scooter rides. Luca shares these adventures with his newfound best friend, but all the fun is threatened by a deeply held secret. He is a sea monster from another world just below the water surface.
Italian Christopher Walken. Love it.
It was all over the place. But then again, was it any more offensive than the bad guy in Luca and his ridiculous accent?
I rode that Vespa up in your dad's ass.
Oh my God.
Wow.
So the animation is beautiful, undeniably beautiful. It made me want to travel again. You know, the imaginary town they have designed. I'm pretty sure anything based on
makes me want to travel again. Like you can basically just be like, oh, there's
I know, but when it's somewhere that you kind of feel like you've been, I'm you know, it's based on those Italian seaside towns, but I think particularly around Cinque Terre, and it's just beautifully done. And I love the underwater, like I love, you know, seeing a seaweed, you know, dominated underwater environment in animation when we've seen so much tropical coral stuff. That was really
good. You know it. You know the underwater very well.
I've seen a lot of the underwater and I enjoyed this underwater.
It was a different kind of underwater from my usual underwater.
No fish fucking in this one.
Hey, I don't believe there was an awful lot of fish fucking in Puff either.
I'm not talking about Puff.
A gentle and lovely story about a small fish.
Wait, so is this a prequel to Shape of Water?
Oh, you know what?
I did occasionally get a vibe. I did occasionally get some vibes of Shape of Water.
Yeah. Anyway, she grows up and bangs a fish.
Yeah, we just went full like kombucha girl mode. We're like, actually.
I thought thought you said that this was...
I feel like we need to clarify that the fish fucking reference is actually like an off-stream reference to the many months that I spent for Australia's Ocean Odyssey trying to get two clownfish to breed so that we could film macro eggs. Like
that. Sorry, I just love
Amy's comment, the context.
Shape of pasta.
See, I'm really glad that I missed this one because I just don't. I don't understand.
I mean, we're not selling it particularly well.
No.
Like, I will sell it on the basis.
I didn't give you one clip. There is one clip in this film. Like, the rest, the film itself is lovely. Is, as you said, Pete, it's beautiful. It's got a delightful visual style. It's very, very kind of Gumby and you know, simplistic and childlike, but at the same time, beautiful. But there is one scene with one character in it that I'm fucking annoyed that I didn't get you to get a clip of, which is Sacha Baron Cohen's weird ass fish dude.
Good for you to talk about a clip that you didn't tell me to get. Like, fantastic. Let's go to that.
Everybody has to go and watch it just for Sacha Baron Cohen's weird fucking fish guy.
I do have the trailer. Should I play that now so that people understand what Luca is? And then we can move on to the next one. All right.
Wow. Luca. Ah! That was hard to watch. You, coming? We do not go anywhere near the surface. Got it? Everything good is above the surface. Walking. Air! The sky, clouds, the sun. Whoa, don't look at it. Just kidding. Definitely look at it.
Have you ever gone to the human town?
Yeah. I'm kind of an expert. Someone got lucky today.
Hey, leave them alone. Hop on.
Go start a club for losers.
My name is Giulia Marcovaldo. We underdogs have to look out for each other.
What's under the dogs?
This is my dad.
What do you think he kills with those?
Anything that swims.
Your life is so much cooler than mine.
There's a million things you think you can't do. All you need is a chance to try. Woo!
Something's fishy with you two.
This is too dangerous. Lucius!
I know your problem. You've got a Bruno in your head.
A Bruno?
Say, Silencio Bruno.
Silencio Bruno.
Louder. Silencio Bruno.
Silencio Bruno.
Silencio Bruno.
Silencio Bruno.
Can you still hear him?
Nope. Just you.
Good. Now hang on. Silencio
Bruno. I thought your accent was bad, and now I know that it's totally in keeping with that film.
The bad guy, the bad bike riding bad guy, has a very, very broad accent.
Everyone had a broad accent in that film.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
What's the next one?
Not broadly one accent.
No.
I will say, to try and sell that movie to anybody, if you enjoy Ghibli films, it's probably the closest you'll find to that in 3D animation.
Yeah. Like, absolutely.
It looks fun. It's just I was just going, oh, that's just the Little Mermaid without any of the, I need to get married to a dude.
It's probably a more solid, you know, importance of friendship coming of age story than the Little Mermaid, but it does have a part of their world vibe at the beginning.
But no talking crabs. 2 out of 5. All right. Next film. What's the next one? Come on. Sorry. I know we just got a lot. Like, unless we're going to be here at 10 o'clock. It's almost 8 o'clock now. Come on.
Okay. So are we talking Encanto?
Sure.
Encanto.
Yeah.
Being the only musical of the three films, it is, you know, obviously.
Actually, we shouldn't talk about Encanto. Let's move on to Turning Red.
No.
I did watch this one, see? I made a joke.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah. Encanto, made by some people who aren't very famous, and was fine.
Yeah, I mean, like, Lin-Manuel Miranda has sold his soul to Disney officially and has written a full musical for them. And it's great. I enjoyed it. I loved all of the cast that was in this as well. If you guys remember our In the Heights chat, there's quite a lot of the In the Heights cast in this movie. Stock standard Latinas, but everybody is brilliant.
Yeah. My personal favorite being Stephanie Beatrice, who plays Mirabel Madrigal. So anyone who watches Brooklyn Nine-Nine will know Stephanie Beatrice, but she's also she is very much go-to Latina voice actor at the moment. She's also one of the leads in Maya and the Three, which is one of the coolest fucking animated series that I've seen doing
around.
She's
so hot right now.
She is, and she did most of this film whilst heavily pregnant.
Damn.
Apparently, one of the songs she had to do re-records for while actually in labor. She didn't want to tell people. Yes. Yeah. She was recording bits of song while she was in labor, and they were like, oh, you can get it to us by tomorrow. And she's like, yes, I can do that.
Wow.
So that's not a really good.
Fucking badass.
That's not a really good story, like, for Disney.
No,
that's a terrible story. Woman in labor still
some
was
labor laws around that.
Labor laws. Yeah, you get it? Yeah. That's not a heartwarming story that anyone thinks. It's like, I did this while I was giving birth. It's like, that's a terrible thing to have to do. Holy shit, but Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, you're a badass, but also, no, don't do that.
Okay, fine, but I thought it was a cool story.
But then again, that matches with the generational trauma of, like, I must provide for my family. I must do everything by the book. I have to sacrifice myself in order to raise up other people, and I'm going to pass that trauma down to them, and then they're going to have it, and it's just going to be a cycle where you must...
It was basically the Louisa of the entire production, is what you're saying.
We must feed the mouse because the mouse is hungry.
Oh, God. What's the story about?
Would you like some background music?
Quinny, are you going to do some more racist accents?
The Madrigals are an extraordinary family who live hidden in the mountains of Colombia in a charmed place called the Encanto. The magic of the Encanto has blessed every child in the family with a unique gift, except child Mirabel. However, she soon may be the Madrigal's only hope when she discovers that the magic surrounding the Encanto is now in danger. I have no idea. What music is this?
Generic music.
Generic Rock 3.
Oh, good. Excellent. Because that's totally appropriate for a musical that has such astonishing and well-known songs.
Astonishing and well-known songs that are completely licensed and cracked down upon. And
likely to get us pinged on DRM. So you are correct. Well done.
Why not? I mean, you can buy the soundtrack. It's available now. Buy through our links, or don't buy the album and just send us that money for a Ko-fi.
The music is beautiful and catchy and you know,
there's
obviously
just something so vivacious about it and lively, and I just wanted to get up and dance when I was watching this movie.
And I think it's all of the Colombian influence in the music, obviously, and anyone who's interested should watch some of the behind the scenes interviews that have been done with Lin-Manuel Miranda about, you know, creating that music, because it is super, super interesting. But it's just such a satisfying watch, Encanto, because it, like, it just gives everything that you wanted it to give and probably a little bit more, particularly if you are a girl, maybe somebody who's grown up with sisters, or, you know, who has experience in those kinds of family dynamics. I know, like, a lot of it's cultural, but a lot of it is universal.
I mean, imagine being a part of a family where everyone else is a very successful person and has a value that keeps getting espoused to the rest of the community, except you don't have one and they just keep pointing it out.
Well, I must admit, I was watching this and I was like, is this family, like, completely idiotic? Are they completely heartless that they can't recognize that constantly pointing out somebody's limitations may actually make them feel bad?
No, oh, I don't know. Let's ask my family.
Families.
I love that they explore the other side of it as well. I love that they explore that, you know, that the pressure that you are under when, you know, if you are perceived to be the person in the family who, you know, has the talent or needs to be perfect.
Yeah.
It pulled a lot of weight in a lot of ways. And I think that there's something in there for a lot of people, and representation wise, it's super cool. And I think one of the important things about it is, you know, my 3-year-old nephew, this is his new favorite movie. He calls it my movie. And when he goes to bed, we put on the music from his movie, and his favorite character is Louisa. And yes. I don't think that 3-year-old boys, when we were growing up, had anything like that, you know, building their worldview. So I think this film just does a lot in a lot of ways, and I kind of love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it does it in such a stylishly beautiful visual way as well. Like, I think a film like this could rely on the music and just go, okay, this is a Lin-Manuel Miranda musical. It's going to be very tight on the lyrics. It's going to be things that you need to listen to, but the music's going to be beautiful and flowing. And then you could have done it with visuals like Luca, for example, which is a lot more simple. Whereas this also goes, nah, fuck it, we're going all out.
Yeah.
We're going to have incredible visuals. We're going to have color and light and movement everywhere. And really stylish.
That's the slight difference between a Disney Pixar and then a Disney computer-generated animated film, like Frozen and Tangled and stuff like that. You have your, like, supreme, we're going all out on this thing, guys, kind of animated movie, and that was what Encanto has been recently. Like, the last one we had was Frozen 2. So,
I mean, thankfully, God,
everything
music
about it was just, sorry, Dion, was just so rich. Like, the costume that Mirabel wears, like, the embroidery that you can see in the skirt had me drooling. I'm like, oh, my God, the textures, and everybody's hair is just fabulous. And I just need to point out the dancing looked so natural. And I'm just like, oh, my God, like, these people doing body rolls. And I'm like, yes, give it to me. This is amazing.
What I also love is the very different range of faces that we were seeing in this, that these are Colombian people, but or Latina, Latinx, whatever you want to say, but there are also Black, Latina, there is, a very different palette.
A wide variety of skin tones within the community that was reflected in the movie.
And I love that they're all just part of the family. At no point in time is there ever a question about that. It's just like everybody's part of this family.
Yeah.
I dug it. And you know, even though we're not meant to talk about Bruno, no. I loved his design too. I thought he, you know, sat apart and looked different enough, but at the same time, beautiful design work.
Mm.
Yeah. And before we get too much into it, we still have a whole other movie to get to. Yes. I know, right?
We do.
Why did we do this to ourselves? Why did we do this to you?
I've got clips about, like, we had the Encanto trailer at the start there, so we don't need to play that one again just yet. And we can come back to it. I think there was a universal espousing of love for Encanto. Now, for something completely different is one movie that I only watched a couple of days ago, which was Turning Red.
Yes.
Yay!
And
which is a film that did so much more than I thought it would.
Yeah. Are we going to watch the trailer first, or are we just going to talk about it?
Let's watch the trailer first. We'll watch the trailer for Turning Red, and then we'll come back and talk about that quickly. And then we'll do spoilers, finally.
Yes.
And we can talk about all the things like intergenerational trauma.
Let's go.
I'm Aileen Lee. I wear what I want, say what I want, 24/7, 365.
I never said nobody.
I know, it's a lie. Like, I don't got time to mess around.
Je me fromage blanc.
All about that hustle, am I right?
Poor town.
This is gonna be the best year ever. And nothing's gonna get in my way.
All right!
Maymay, breakfast is ready.
It's coming.
It's gonna be me.
Is everything okay?
I'm a gross red monster. Don't look at me. Stay back.
This happened already?
What did you say?
Our ancestors had a mystical connection with red pandas.
Are you kidding me?
This little quirk runs in our family. You're so cute.
Sick. I've always wanted a tail.
I'm a freak.
We love you, May.
You're our girl.
Whoa. You're you.
Any strong emotion.
Yes.
Will release the panda.
Abby, hit me.
Oh.
Do you know how dangerous this is? You'll get whipped up into a frenzy and panda all over.
OMG! My whole life I've been perfect little Maymay. Yeah! But maybe I like this new me.
Mama's girls.
Stop!
That was a fun trailer. But
I have
just,
not seen the trailer, and I love the inclusivity of NSYNC. It's going to be May.
I like the film, but I just didn't. I like the film, but I just didn't get the metaphor.
Okay. You never went through puberty, Dion?
No, I don't understand. Like, I couldn't quite. Why was she a red panda? She was a 13-year-old girl, and then she's
having
all
you didn't
of these
get
problems.
Hairy and smelly when you turned 13.
No, I came out
right to this very day.
I came out pretty much like this.
Oh. I just want to say, first and foremost, all the people that are shitting on it can go suck a dick because it's doing exactly what it's supposed to do.
It gives so much more than I thought it would give.
The conservatives that are complaining about it haven't even seen it.
Oh my god.
Like, they're just, oh, it's about periods. I'm like, bitch, have you even watched the movie? Like, calm down.
But what, like, honestly,
the things that really confused me about it when I first started to watch it is the era that it's set in. Because at first I was like, oh, this feels like my childhood because Gen Z is doing my childhood. But then, no, this is my childhood.
No. Done by people that lived that childhood as well.
And were that child.
Yes.
I watched the making of Doco this afternoon and was so fucking impressed by it in terms of, like, the movie was made a fairly large percentage of it was made during lockdown.
Yeah.
So, you know, people working from home and doing a lot of this via Zoom, which is really cool. But the production team, like specifically the upper echelon of the production team, all women.
Yeah.
Every single one, director, producer, like everybody above the line, women. And I was just like, it shows. You can tell it. And I was really, really impressed. But also that documentary is well worth seeking out just for the way that they make this film. Like,
yeah, it gives you a really good insight into, you know, I don't know, like the slice of life nature that the film was all about.
Yeah. And you know, how important things are about learning, you know, that your parents also have, you know, emotions and that they are just as fucked up as you are. Like people who became parents during the process of making the film. So they're suddenly going, oh shit, hang on, parents don't know what the fuck they're doing. And it's interesting. I got the impression that Domi, the director,
Domi,
Domi, yeah, sorry. Kind of got to the idea, like was finding the ending as it went.
Yes.
That,
yeah.
You know, that maybe this is actually, as you say, Dion, and as you're so fond of saying, intergenerational trauma.
Intergenerational trauma.
It's the best example of it in the three for sure. And I really want to dig into some of that when we get to spoilers.
When would you like to go to that?
Very soon. Very soon.
I'm just checking. I just like everyone to remember that it is also budget night. So, you know, what are the key takeaways? We've got the budget.
What I'm really excited about is to move on. The fucking budget.
Yeah, if you've got other things to do, Dion.
Oh, okay. No.
Yeah, if you would like to go and watch Josh Frydenberg do his thing.
I don't want to watch Josh Frydenberg do fucking anything.
Okay, fine. So you're not interested in the budget update. I'll turn the logo off.
No, I really don't give a fuck.
All right, okay, fine.
So anyway, the moral of this story is that there is no conclusion because the thing is, it's like nobody is, you know, really right at the end of the day. It's all about learning and growing as your children age and as your parents get older as well, and like just trying to learn from one another and accept that we are all individuals and have our own... feelings, desires.
Super nailed that Y2K boy band sound.
Oh, yeah.
I just like it honestly sold me. I remember that part of there when the mother, I can't remember, May's mother was there going,
Ming,
yes. But it's like, oh, it's this greatest band ever, a Four Town. And she's quietly on the couch went, but why are there five of them?
I know.
Yes. So funny.
Perfect.
At least Four Town, right. Members of five.
Why are there five of them? Anyway, moving on. Don't ask that question again.
So, yeah, I based on watching the trailer for Turning Red, I was not excited about watching it. Like, it didn't look like my thing. It, like, you know, looked maybe a little bit cutesy for me. Mm-hmm. And then I watched it. I got a lot of out of it. I cried. Like, I had a great time, but I was also just so impressed with how much weight it pulled.
Cried so many times throughout the duration of this movie.
Yeah.
It's a lot of stuff that hits hard.
It'll get you.
Yeah.
So should we just pop into spoilers and talk about those things?
Sure.
Are we going to rate any of these or are we just chatting about
it? No, you're running this one, Pete. So you just tell us what we've got to do. If we
I think
need to
we just do like
a
yay or nay on them.
Yeah.
Maybe not a rating.
I think it's very difficult. I mean, for a start, there's a lot of numbers for me to crunch later. So I'm a big fan of saying yay or nay.
three
ratings for every single fucking film for all of the chat.
How are we supposed to quantify three different films?
Kanga says, put them in the order I should watch them. I think that is fair. And that order for me is Encanto, Turning Red, and Luca. And they're all watchable.
I would agree with that order.
I disagree.
Okay.
You've only seen two.
You haven't
them,
seen, yeah.
Because from all accounts and for all intents and purposes, Luca is the weakest of the three. Not that that's a bad thing, because like, how can you have three?
Yeah, but I mean, you got to prioritize them, and I would put
I want
number one as the highest priority.
No, I'll get them out of the way. It's like Luca first,
okay,
and then Turning Red, and then Encanto. But I mean,
but if you watch Encanto first, you can watch Encanto again after the others.
Encanto sandwich.
Yeah.
Oh.
Why are you stopping there? You've got all the rest of it. When do you add? Do you just add Moana as a palate cleanser at the end?
Ooh, I love Moana.
I'm not sure. Like, if you do Turning Red, Moana, and Encanto, you may like never recover your emotions.
And then for the piece de resistance, Up.
Oh no! Oh, just the first 10 minutes of Up, and then
you watch the first 10 minutes of Up, and then it's like, well, I'm fucked. I'll see you next week.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Oh, dear.
Actually, I like that one. So start with Encanto, then was it Luca, then Turning Red? Or then Turning Red, then Luca?
It's your opinion, Luca love. Really? Your
opinion. Because, I mean, the order that I watched them in was Encanto, Luca, then Turning Red. No, wrong way, sorry. Encanto, Turning Red, then Luca. And I don't know, like, I still found Luca really joyful. and beautiful. It was just, I mean, like, it wasn't perhaps as universal, which is funny because the thing that I've heard people really having a go at Turning Red about is that they didn't find it spoke to them, you know. A couple of people I've seen who said, oh, well, this wasn't for me. And I was like, then cool, but
yeah,
don't shit on it.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure.
I mean, yeah. I suppose Luca was the least profound of the three movies.
It's so, pulled the least weight in terms of it doesn't do anything particularly new with its storytelling. It's a lovely story about friendship and coming of age that I feel like we've heard before many times, and it doesn't mean that it's not worth telling the story again in a new and beautiful way. But I feel like Encanto and Turning Red both did things thematically and explored things that I have never seen explored in this context. And that's the difference. That's what, you know, puts them ahead for me.
I think Luca would have been a much more interesting film if it hadn't been queer baiting and it actually tried to say something.
Yes, Disney are anti-LGBT, even if they say they're not.
Yeah, like, sorry, the relationship between Alberto and Luca is, it's clearly, you know, going in a certain direction. And Alberto has feelings for Luca, and you can see all of that, but there, it's, I guess it's because they're going, oh, but it's, they're young, it's innocent, there is no romantic attraction. And you're like, fuck off.
Yeah, but how many other kids have been in that situation and not realized that they're gay?
Yeah. And as soon as you introduce the Julia, you know, and there's suddenly this romantic triangle and there's tension and everything, you're like, oh, hang on. No, we're actually, come on, have the guts to say it. Yeah. And then that whole thing about hiding in plain sight and not being able to be yourself and, you know, having to you know, come out of the closet / water.
Yes, worrying about being exposed.
Has a lot more fucking meaning.
A lot more colourful when you're your true self.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I'm just picking those
things. You're beautiful
up.
Talented and brilliant when you prove yourself.
Can I just also, I need to acknowledge the chat has some interesting things to say that has been going on there. I just want to say thank you, Missy, for pointing out. Encanto is spectacle, showy, huge emotional range, excellent. Luca is nice, cute, fine. Turning Red is important, good, fine. And also, yes, Amy has pointed out in the chat, is like, what was May in Turning Red selling tickets for? Herself.
As I said, herself.
Yes. So it sort of is it an OnlyFans reference? I don't know what the fuck is going on with this movie. It's got levels.
You didn't have OnlyFans in 2002.
Are you sure? It was just mail away.
So,
anyway,
spoiler time.
Yes. Okay.
We have a clip to bring us in, or are we just going to go for it?
Sure. What do you want? Is it the one that Quinny like thought that he wanted but didn't tell me, so I didn't make it? I can put that one on.
Fuck you.
Hey, what would you
like? Is that one from Turning Red?
What? Sorry, which one would you after? You want it?
Well, I believe you've got one from Turning Red, and is that the only one we've got? Or
sure. I've got one from Turning Red. You watch the Turning Red one? Yep.
What? Sure.
All right, okay, then fine.
Fort Town's coming to Toronto!
What? Shut up! It's me! Calm down, all right? I'm gonna let go, and you're gonna be chill. Got that? Chill. May?
Are you a werewolf?
No! What?
He's a red panda!
Sick.
You're so fluffy! You're so fluffy!
I've always wanted a tail.
Priya, Abby, quit it! May, what the heck happened?
It's just some, you know, inconvenient, genetic thingy I got from my mom. I mean, it'll go away. Eventually. Maybe.
Oh, no! Dealing with
go stuff. Away sometime in your late 40s, early 50s. Like,
sure, if you're gonna push the metaphor, Look, I mean, it's just, such a nice, like, I was watching it going, this looks like such a nice way to introduce this, all of those things that are happening during puberty for girls that I didn't experience because I was a boy, but not that that really should have mattered. It was just really nice to watch it. So what was your experience of seeing this? Is this one of those ones where you're like, I wish this was around when I was growing up? Or was it just like...
Kind of.
No, kind of, sort of.
I
think that it could have been a while while I was growing up, but I don't think I would have understood it the way that I understood it now, because there's a lot that this addresses, and this is where I kind of, it surprised me in terms of the way that it addresses not only the full emotional and psychological and physical gamut of what happens, you know, around that age, and the way that your friendships and your relationships are so important at that age and how they all play into it, but also that it can be quite traumatic and that that trauma can have lasting consequences. And that, you know, I did not expect it to even go there, and I hadn't even really thought about it until we get to the end of the film, and you know, we actually reveal that, say it, Dion,
intergenerational trauma.
that is, you know, in part triggered by that time of life for Ming. And I just thought, I was like, that did a lot for me, and I was so happy to see something that addressed that. So it would have been nice to see it when I was that age, but I don't think I would have really got it on that level at all.
When you're in the middle of that, it's very difficult to see out of it.
Yes.
Like when you're a teenager, you are fucking incapable of much in the way of empathy for anyone older than you. You love your friends, you love the people around you, you care about them, and your focus changes from your family to your friends. But yeah, whether you would be able to be watching that as a teenager and going, actually, shit, maybe my mum actually is dealing with her own shit too, and maybe I should try and help her a bit with it. No, fuck that.
No, my coping mechanism was being cynical as fuck.
It's also absolutely true that some mother-daughter relationships break during that period and are never ever repaired. And that, you know, causes, you know, issues then with that person's relationship with their daughter and so on and so forth. And I kind of like the way that they kind of addressed it fairly gradually in the beginning, how controlling Ming is, and particularly, you know, the element of shaming Mei when it comes to, you know, having the most basic sexual thoughts or fantasies at all, and like the massive amount of shame that was then dumped on her for that. I was like, that's the truth.
Which is interesting, because like, even though the mother is willing to lump shame on that for any kind of sexualization or any kind of thing, she's willing to support and, you know, provide all of the drugs and the hot water bottles and everything like that for the possibility that a daughter may be having her first period. Like, that's a thing that she's ready for.
The thing is, though, she's not inflicting shame with the purpose of making Mei feel bad. She's doing it with the intention of, oh, my daughter has been victimized by her sexuality and is taking it out on other people, and not realizing that she's judging her daughter and making her feel ashamed of it. And that's kind of what hurts more when you're in Mei's position, is that, you know, it's a two-way street in trying to understand each other, and Ming is just as much to blame as Mei is for not understanding one another and for going about things the wrong way. And I think it's probably true for a lot of people. You know, parents just want to do stuff with the best intentions for their children, but they don't realize that, you know, they're using a double-edged sword. It's also hurting. So, I don't know, like communication needs to be more of a thing, guys. Let's get rid of that old thing of bottling it up and talk about our feelings.
Yeah. Well, and there was a character in there that I found interesting as well. Like, even though the whole story is so much about the either the friends or the aunties or the, you know, the multi-generational trauma, there's also the father in there. And he's got an interesting perspective on it in that he was around when Ming was going through her shit and knows so much of what she did and, you know, was probably the cause of a lot of it too. As he said, you know, your mum had these problems because of me. And like, okay, he's got an interesting perspective, but then seeing how Ming deals with him is a whole different thing too. And you're like, so the trauma is not just between the women of the family, it's also spreading to everybody else.
It was what a beautiful portrayal of a father and daughter relationship as well.
I found a lot of these ones in this as well had so positive masculine roles in them and very much supportive. Like, I like that they stood back a lot, but they were very supportive and positive about it.
I mean, there's a trope in Eastern familial relationships like that the men can be quite emasculated by their wives, but it was nice to see that was not the situation that was happening here. He was just a very soft-spoken man, and when it counted and when it mattered most, he was able to connect with his daughter and say, hey, you know, maybe give your mum a break. Like, here's her perspective.
Dion is right. That is a theme that was in Kanto. Mm. As well, and particularly
don't
being
talk
that,
about Bruno.
Well, particularly being that the father in Encanto wasn't married into the family with the powers. He wasn't one like that. So in that way, he could relate to his daughter. Mm. I had noticed that parallel. Those relationships and the portrayal of masculinity in Encanto is quite lovely as well.
Yeah.
There's also an interesting portrayal of fatherhood and masculinity in Luca as well, that Massimo is in many ways could be the, well, there's two. There's you know, the dickhead bike rider guy who is, you know, absolutely positively, toxic masculinity at its worst, and then Massimo, who is quiet, reserved, but also still caring and able. And if you've watched the short film, Ciao Alberto, there's some lovely stuff in there that is about, you know, father-son bonding and stuff as well. So
it seems a lot tonight you've got a whole thing of like, go and watch the extra bits. Have you watched? You've watched the film, but have you gone and watched the additional 10-minute short film? That's a bookend.
Well, this is me proving that I've done more than the homework. Oh. I'm just being a dickhead. That's all I'm being.
It feels like you're copying and pasting Wikipedia links to me, Quinny.
Jeez, you are shady tonight, Dion.
I have intergenerational trauma.
I think it speaks really well of all three films that we've all been kind of separately motivated to seek out the extra bits and check them out. I've not watched the Turning Red documentary, but I'd really like to.
I wish that. I do want to see the Encanto extra thing, so.
Yeah, I haven't watched much of those. What is there in terms of that? Is it just the making of, or?
I thought you said you watched the Encanto extras.
Oh, no, there are a bunch of little featurettes on YouTube.
Oh, okay.
On the Disney.
That's
YouTube.
The thing I haven't seen.
So the question I want to ask is, do you feel comfortable with the direction that Disney and Pixar is going? And do you think that their quality is still keeping up after all of this time? Like, you know,
yeah.
I'm asking. I'm not saying that it's bad. You feel like
I'm
not setting you up for a fail. Like I'm not here with a gotcha call.
I think there's a lot of good movement in diversity amongst the creators and the stories that they're being allowed, and I do say being allowed to tell, because it is very curated. But it's good that, you know, you're getting such younger voices out there, more diverse voices, like all sorts of backgrounds, not just racially, but like socially as well. And I mean, the more inclusivity we can get, the better.
Yeah.
There is a cynical part of me that looks at them and cannot help but feel occasionally like we're ticking a bunch of boxes.
Oh, like, mate, and that they could be doing so much more.
Yeah, and that we are targeting very specific audiences each time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with Moana, we targeted a particular audience. With, you know, Luca, very specific audience. In Canto, let's make sure that we're looking at our Latino audience. You know, all that kind of stuff. I think it'd be very easy to say, hey, look at them. Look at this cynical way of appealing to minorities.
But when you have a history of white fairy tales, you got to understand that there are other people out there in the world, and now it's time to tell their stories too.
Yeah, I mean, they're boxes that they should be ticking.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There's just one that they keep going to start the tick, but they just can't quite follow through.
Yeah,
and that is just commit to a gay character and stop doing the J.K. Rowling thing of saying, oh, in retrospect, no, they were gay. Oh, look, here's a lesbian kiss that we'll put on screen for 2 seconds in Star Wars.
Yeah, I think
cynicism.
When it comes to representation,
I'm glad I've rubbed off on everyone.
When we have gone for so long with so little representation, if you have to literally write yourself a list and check those boxes and that's how you get it done, then that's how it should get done. But I also think that every single one of these films, and I know we've kind of had this discussion before when we're talking about Maya and the Last Dragon, that just because, and I do think that this is a demographic thing, just because a story has people who don't look like us in it does not actually mean that the story is not for us, because all of these stories have super universal themes and very traditional storytelling structures that are for everyone. So just because a film is set in Colombia and because it's set in Colombia, happens to be full of Colombian characters, or because a film is centered on a Canadian Asian family, then it happens to have more Asian characters. Mm. I don't believe that means that the film is not for us. I felt like Turning Red very was for me, even though there was a cultural aspect in the relationships, certainly in the relationships that were being portrayed, and that's really important. There was so much in it that was universal and that spoke really hard to me.
Yeah,
that I loved it. And it's the same in Encanto, you know. I mean, everyone knows which sister they are. if you're a person who exists inside of that family dynamic, you know, are you the sister that always gets overlooked, or are you the sister that feels like you're doing everyone else's labor, or are you the sister that feels like you have to be perfect all the time? You know, the reason these films are so successful is they deal in big universal themes that speak to a lot of people. And I love that. If there is not a Disney Pixar film that features a white lead in the next 15 years, I will be happy, because there are so many other ways to tell these stories.
Yeah. And you know what? When you can put together a story like this and say, okay, but where shall we put the story? It's like, it doesn't always have to be in a white area. Like if you look at the backlash over the live action Little Mermaid, where they've cast Hailey Berry, a black woman, to play Ariel, the amount of people that freak the fuck out because they're like, Ariel's white. For one, she's a fucking mermaid and that's not a real thing. So you can be any color you want to be. stop policing shit as it has to be white. Like, no, it doesn't. It can literally be whatever it wants to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I do hope that we see more of it. Like, because, yeah, as you mentioned before, Pete, there's Raya and the Last Dragon. We also got Soul that long ago, which, you know, once again, playing to a very different audience. And it's interesting, like, I was talking to somebody who really didn't get into Turning Red, and they were like, they didn't feel it was universal enough. And I was like, well, what was universal? And he said, well, something like, Inside Out, which even though it's about a preteen girl, felt like he was saying that it felt more universal, like that it was more.
I would argue that's still also very niche because not everybody has mental health issues.
Yeah. Okay, here's my question to you guys then. You know, obviously Turning Red is, you know, clearly thematically centered around a teenage girl's journey at a particular time of her life. Did any of that resonate for you guys, you know, thinking back to your teen years, or did it just all seem completely foreign to you?
Were you guys cringe when you were 13?
Yes. Holy shit, yes.
Oh, my God, yes.
Oh, yeah.
I'm pretty sure I had a diary at one point. I found it. I found it years later when I was in my mid-30s and I read that shit and I'm like, oh, God.
Yes. I remember drawing, like, flame pictures and, throwing them out before anyone saw them.
Absolutely cringe in that way, but just different kind of ways. And the entire thing, like, you could just do the entire thing for guys, but for, you know, Wet Dreams. It'd be a different movie. I don't know what it would be. Would it be like, you know, Turning White? It was like, yeah, kind of.
Ew.
Every.
Hey, whoa.
Ew. Let's not get too literal.
You know, it's there was less about the physiology and more about the psychology, right? Yeah. Like, I think the hormonal shit that's happening, I know it's a little bit different for girls and boys or people who were identified as girls and or boys at the time. But essentially it's the same. Like, if you ever got, like, you know, inexplicably angry to the point where you couldn't speak, or, you know, the first time you had a crush, or, like, the first time you had a really big argument with your mum and dad, like, you know, a really big one that you actually kind of thought that you would never come back from and that you would hate them and that they would hate you forever. Like,
I remember the first time I swore at my dad.
Sure.
I was a teenager and it was a bad time with a capital B and a capital T.
Did you get the wooden spoon?
Oh, no, I was out on a boat. And
he's got left.
Yeah, we would.
He's going to push off the boat.
Got the belt.
I could well have gone for a swim, but thankfully my dad just swore back at me. But, you know, but it was, one of those things. And when you're, like, I remember being a teenager and being a dick to my mum because, I remember asking at one point, do I have to ask you to do everything for me? And at the time, I was like, yes, you do, because I don't know what you fucking want. But also now as an adult, I'm like, when you look around the house, you can probably see that shit needs doing, you know, as all of these things that are universal, because we all have had those experiences something like.
You could easily remake Turning Red, but just change out the gender to a teenage boy who has all the same sort of things, like falls in love with a girl band and, you know, gets really angry and punches drywall, works through emotion.
The funny thing is we've made that story before, except the teenage boy doesn't turn into a red panda. He turns into a giant green Hulk.
Yes.
Can I make a point about Turning Red, and that you could argue that there is the cis male version of that within the actual movie with Tyler, annoying Tyler. True. Like, if you see the movie from his perspective and the amazing change that he goes through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was so happy, like, that at the end that, you know, he turns up at the concert and they become friends. So I was like, that was lovely.
it's all good. And I actually found that very refreshing that it was so defocused on the stories from the male perspective that it allowed that space to come through, because you can still apply all of the learnings that come through. There was no exclusive gendered lesson in any of the films, or the ones that I saw, like Encanto, or like, there's still the same lessons you can learn. There's still the same thing, like, try and understand your parents. Also, parents, try not to push your trauma onto your kids. Like, this, I think that's what the greatest thing about all of these films is. It's like, the reason that we're making all of these films like this is because we want parents who are sitting there taking their kids to see these films to maybe go, maybe I should be a bit more understanding to my kids and not be such a dick, because maybe like, my parents were dicks
to
me.
That was me and my parents. Oh, shit, I don't want
to
do that.
Yeah. It's like, oh, my God, I need to talk to people about these emotions. Maybe I should communicate with my children about emotions.
And
let them understand that I'm having them too.
You know what? There's actually a really good point in the Turning Red documentary that the woman who is the producer of the film is a mother to three teenagers. And throughout the making of the movie, she was questioning herself as to like, oh, how do I talk to my kids? Like, can I talk to them as a person? Like, can I relate to them, or do I have to have this mother role of like being a parent and you have to act a certain way? So it is making people question how they parent.
I think it's good. Like, I mean, you know, we don't sit there and sort of break apart all, like, you don't go back to Snow White or Cinderella and be like, what were they saying about the horrible stepmother and the three stepsisters or whatever it was? Like, was that a metaphor? It's like, no, it was like, find a rich dude, marry him. At least these
days.
Don't
trust women.
Yeah, don't trust women.
Yeah,
especially
don't trust women, especially not old ones, because they're useless and they're probably evil.
Yes.
Yeah, they're probably witches.
Yeah. That's me.
Which is ridiculous, because witches are all wicked good and love the earth, and I'll be over here.
can I also say about Turning Red that I loved like the all white outfits that the boy bands were wearing when they lost.
Are you even a boy band in the early 2000s if you didn't dress the same?
It was just so perfect.
The angel wings as well, and the
the angel wigs did it for me. I was just like, my God. Like them busting out of their cages and stuff like that and just being so cool.
Yeah.
That perfect example of like pretty much harmless sexuality, like fantasies that is just created around those things.
Yeah.
Especially boy bands. Like,
The non-threatening
romantic
interest.
I did love that whole thing of that we have to go to the concert because then we will be women.
Yeah. Oh, but I swear I listened to a podcast or something the other day where like the girls were talking about like why did you think that like as a 14-year-old girl shaving your to go to like a One Direction concert and thinking you were going to get laid at the end of it. Like, I'm sorry, Quinny, you are looking very shocked, but every girl has thought of it. They're like, I might have a chance with someone. I need to be ready.
Wow.
For anything.
See, I didn't pick that up from Encanto.
No.
I got a different message from Encanto. Yeah. Sure. All right, I'll go there. Magic House does it all for you. All right.
Congratulations. You actually totally derailed my train of thought. And I was just like.
Now you know what teenage girls are thinking about.
Oh, my God, they have sexual thoughts. No.
No, they are only there to be desired by young boys and then they're to be turned away. No. Oh, God. Yeah. God. I so love that lovely. Whole thing of, actually, that was what I was going to talk about. Oh. Sorry. You go, Pete.
No, I was just going to, no, quick point, like just a lovely portrayal of female friendship and how important it is and what it's like at that age. And I would say, I think I've mentioned this before, my other favourite portrayal of that in that era is the TV series Pen 15. Which really like is cringe comedy, which is a little bit hard to get past, but it nails it. It nails being that age at that time and the relationships that you have with your best friend and the people around you. Like, highly recommend.
What were you going to say?
You can go now, Quinny.
Oh, just that there was... No. That was a very, very good point. And there was a character in Turning Red that I also did have a brief moment where I thought, okay, maybe a hint there at LGBT representation. So May's best friend, who I'm trying to find the name of,
Miriam.
I cannot for the life of me. Is it Miriam?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Miriam with the braces. There are a couple of moments where she's seen kind of getting quite close with this goth chick. And I was like, oh, that'd be nice. I would like that if, you know, part of that group was, queer in some way, shape or form.
And thought, also, like, May's mother, Ming, being suspicious of Miriam out of all of the girls. And I'm like, oh, she's targeting this one. She knows something's up.
Meanwhile, you've got Abby, who is just fucking 100% goblin energy.
Love her so much.
She's always an Abby.
Yeah.
And the Tamagotchi.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. Actually, that I thought was a beautiful ending.
Yes.
I dug that a lot. And I love the way that they sort of represented the spirituality side of it as well. Like, you know, the panda spirits and everything like that. They had a lot of character to them, and I really loved that. Especially the aunts. I just loved all of the
panda. When the aunties showed up, I'm like, yes, the aunties.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Look, they're three lovely films. I think Luca is one of those ones that you could put on a Saturday afternoon, have it on in the background and be like, oh, yeah, that's cute. The others, I think, probably have a bit more to say.
Yeah. A lot of rewatchability as well.
Mm.
I know, like, just talking about Turning Red, I want to watch it again. And I definitely need to watch Encanto again.
Yeah.
And you can watch Encanto on repeat and never get sick of it. I think just because the music is so great. I'll be watching probably both of them again, and I'll be heartily encouraging other people who haven't seen them to watch them, because they're both just really worth it. And Luca, beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful film, really nice story. Let's all go to Italy.
Yes.
Yes.
I'll go to Italy.
Yeah.
Eye bags riding the Vespa. That's the cool character, right? Yeah, okay.
That's right. You can ride a Vespa.
Fuck. No.
You have to ride it like it is.
I am not going anywhere with you, Quinny. Hey. Fuck, no.
It's like Luca is one of those films that you could really take a leave most of, apart from Sacha Baron Cohen's character, who shows up for precisely 3 minutes and is the weirdest fucking bit of the film. And I was watching it on the couch, and I looked across to Zave, and he looked at me, and he's like, what the fuck was that?
I'm sorry, that just really bugged me, because it's so unlikely that a shallow water species would be directly related to a deep sea species. And like, also, how did he get up? Like he lives at a completely different pressure. Wait, so
who's a deep sea species? What the fuck is going on with Luca? I didn't watch this.
Oh, Dion, you got to watch it.
I watched
for that sequence.
I watched that film underwater, so that's roughly the same, right?
And yes, Peter is the ocean.
She's the industry and the ocean.
It almost broke the entire story for me, guys. Like, you don't know. Like, they wouldn't be related. They live in completely different parts of the ocean.
Jesus.
All right. This is true. I think his name's Uncle Hugo. It's Uncle Hugo, who is a weird deep sea anglerfish whose eyes are never in the same direction. And it's like also shows up at the end of the credits as well, in case you weren't aware. It's so weird.
Looks like I've got some weird shit to do.
Yes, I can understand. It's immersion breaking.
Speaking of weird shit, then, what are we doing next week?
Oh, we've got the weirdest of the weird shit next week.
Two films.
We decided to do more than one film again.
Yes.
Why are we doing this?
It's a new thing that we do just to up the difficulty level and make things a little bit more frenetic.
Yeah, this one's only gone over a little bit. Yeah. But next week we're doing Batty About Bats. Mm-hmm. It's all bat time on all bat channel. Bat forever. Bat men. Oh,
yes.
Bat women.
Some of us will be checking out. Like, most of us will be checking out Morbius.
All of us.
Mobius. Is it Mobius? Jared Leto's strange accent. Looking forward to that one.
Yeah.
I'm digging Jared Leto right now. Like, everything that I've been watching him in is just like, I don't know, he's kicking goals. It was like he's left the Joker in his dust and now he's just doing weird shit and I love it.
Nice.
Yeah.
And also with those people who have had time to watch it, we'll be talking about Das Batman.
Das Batman. Batman main. Das Batman mention.
I want to watch that version.
It's fine. You just put on the Batman, but then you put on the German.
Actually, surely it would be Der Fliegelmausen.
Der Fliegelmausen.
Versus the Nacht Monkey.
Yes.
It's all bats next week. It's all batty as hell. Yes, we'll finally get around to watching the Batman. Yes. Yeah, so it's going to be batty as hell.
Mouth.
Sorry, you're dropping out there, Quinny. You need to do something more with your internet.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry.
Pedal faster.
I'm the top floor of it's going through three floors. My internet is struggling.
Time to hardwire that shit in, buddy.
I think your modem is telling us it's probably time to wrap up.
Yes, that's good.
I think your modem may.
Thank yeah, great.
Yeah, perfect. Cool.
Perfect, perfect story. Anecdote to roll out with there. Just ding, ding, ding. Best accent yet. Yeah. Coming to you live.
Fuck you, I'm trying.
coming to you live from dial-up land. From the internet from 2002. Oh, dear. Yes, lovely to see you.
I will soon be streaming.
Thanks everyone in the chat. You've been lovely in there. You've jumped in. You've given us some things to think about. Put some good stuff. I hope you're all ready to go see the Bat stuff or Jared Leto's stuff. Just watch the House of Gucci again if you want to see Jared Leto.
Yeah, or watch We Crashed on Apple TV. I'm enjoying that at the moment.
Oh, that's right. I'm currently watching Severance.
Oh, I'm loving that.
So I'm trying to get into that and, like getting around those things. Because there's more stuff coming up. If you want to know what we've got coming up,
yes,
do your homework, have a look at the schedule. That's been fun. Cheers. Quinny, do you have someone you want to take us to? Like, we could do that. Perfect.
Oh, I'm fucked if I know.
Wonderful, Sam. yes, okay, Missy, I'll just say that you've got one thing that I saw over like in the chat there is like Raised by Wolves. Okay, it's fucking crazy and I do need to talk about it. It may have to make a return.
Okay,
I don't know why.
I'm now caught up on a couple of episodes and you were talking about like when somebody has a baby and some weird shit happens and I was like, what?
Yes. It may be another Falling Skies, but for some fucking reason, Raised by Wolves in season two has just kind of gone, you thought one was weird. Let's get fucking weird. I'm like, cool. Yeah, great. Thank you for your Max Headroom impersonation. Oh, wait, sorry. Thanks. Just Angela did this.
I would have.
Yep.
Fuck's sake. I would try and raid somebody else, but quite frankly, the only people that are online at the moment are Critical Role, and they're many hours in.
Yeah. Let's raid them. Anyway. We're going to go.
No, I won't drop somebody into the middle of a role-playing stream.
Sure. Thank you, everyone. We'll see you all next time.
Bye. Thank you and good night.
Thanks for listening to the Periodic Table of Awesome podcast. If you have questions, please email info@theperiodictableofawesome.com. Find us on our website, www.theperiodictableofawesome.com, where there's links to our iTunes, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Twitch. Until next time, stay awesome.